What's up, everybody? Armand here with another episode. Today's guest, we have Joe Templin. He's a really cool dude, really fun to talk to. He runs ultra marathons. He started two companies. He wrote a book on how to achieve excellence. This guy is great. He was a lot of fun, and I really hope you enjoy this episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
It's to the point where I was like, I couldn't wait to film this. Yeah, you've done so many really cool things. You're co-founder of The Intro Machine and Exactly. You're a martial artist, an ultra marathon runner, overall practitioner of excellence. And there is so much more that we'll get into later. I don't want to spoil the surprises. But yeah, without further ado, thanks for coming on. Nice to meet you. How's it going, Joe?
It's going great, Armand, or I'm just going to call you number one from now on.
Please do. Yeah, that's actually all my friends call me Uno. You know, it's Uno.
You know what? And now you have a standard to hold yourself to. Exactly. What would the number one do?
I always say that I was destined to be number one because I was born on June 1st. I'm the firstborn. My last name's Uno. It's all that I do.
You know what? You need a t-shirt with just a big number one on it that you wear during podcasts from now on.
I might as well. I'll get it embroidered.
Part of the thing. And I actually said that I was destined to be a writer because my initials are J-R-R-T, the same initials as Tolkien. Yeah. And so that's why my company that owns the rights to my writing is called J-R-R-T One Ring LLC.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. Yeah, I like that. And I've always seen the importance. I mean, maybe because I have a cool name and I'm biased, but I've always found a big importance on the name of something, whether it be a company, you know, a podcast, a song, whatever it may be, the name of something and how it kind of like relates to every single thing that you do.
Well, there's the play, The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. And the entire thing revolves around the name as a reflection of who the person is. And so companies spend a lot of time on this, whether it's with the company name, the products, you know. So it is one of those things where, as Albert Camus said, we find the meaning in it. And so if you are blessed with a good name or a bad name, then you live up to it or you basically counter that name. And it doesn't matter if it's a cool name like Uno or, you know, initials like Tolkien, or if it's, you know, your grandfather did something horrible and you're trying to, you know, overcome that. It gives you a standard to either work up to or to counter and overcome. And we determine ourselves what we're going to do with that.
Yeah. I think, that's a really good point. And I noticed actually something funny is in my background, I happen to be Mexican. And in Mexico, a lot of the nicknames that you're given as a kid are purely based on like your physical attributes. They just call it, like, if you're skinny, they call you flaco. And you can take that how you will. Like maybe some kid doesn't like it and it holds a negative weight, but other kids like, oh, that's el flaco. Like that's the skinny guy. He's the skinny guy. Like it truly is like how you carry yourself and carry that name with you.
And it's how you react to it too. So Patrick Bet-David, the founder of Valuetainment,
yeah,
I mean, when he came over from the Middle East as a kid, he was skinny. I mean, like he talks about in Your Next Five Moves, how he couldn't even lift the bar in the gym. And he's a 6'5", 240-pound monster.
Yeah.
And so they called him Salami because of his skin tone and his thinness, and he used that as fuel to overcome it.
How is that book, by the way? I have it sitting on my
great
shelf.
Book. Okay. Great book. I got the audiobook actually, and it's the first audiobook I finished listening to and immediately listened to again. Wow. And he reads it, so you can hear his tone, his inflection, the emotion, and that's something that I really enjoy with well-written and well-believed audiobooks like Orrin Class, Pitch Anything, he reads it himself. So you, Gary Vaynerchuk does a bunch of his own. So you can hear the story behind it. It means something to them.
I love when authors read their own audiobook. Like you said, it's the message, what they're trying to get across, their passion to it. You can really feel it. Pitch Anything's another excellent book. Let's get into what you're currently doing first, your ventures, and then we'll talk about some of the fun stuff that you like to do, which I really want to get into as well. But the intro machine, so we'll talk about that first. How did that start? And what exactly, so from what I found is it helps people build introduction-based businesses. What exactly is that, and how do you go about doing that?
So my background is I worked in financial services for years. You know, I was a physicist, built weapons for the government, then went into financial planning for 15 plus years, then into consulting, mainly consulting back to financial services. And the reason why most people fail out of financial services, whether it's investments, insurance, mortgages, banking, whatever, is that they can't build a business. And the reason why they can't build a business is because they're just dependent upon their friends and family, the people that they know or the people that they meet at chamber meetings and, you know, buying leads and cold calling and all. And that's BS. To get anything, you need to get it from somebody else who has it. And this is not in a extractive way. This is finding out who has the knowledge, who has the skills, who has the resources that you need, and being able to get in front of them to negotiate your procuring them. So if somebody has, you know, a collectible that you want, let's say, finding out who has it and being able to get in front of them. If somebody's the decision maker in a company that you want to sell something to, finding out who is the decision maker and being able to get introduced there instead of just sending 5,000 emails and cold calling, because that's inefficient. So the intro machine helps people build introduction-based business. Basically, if you're selling yourself in any capacity, whether you're an attorney, an accountant, a coach, a financial advisor, you know, you run a dog clipping business. If you sell yourself and your services, then the best way to build a business is to build an introduction-based business where people who you've worked with adore you, where they truly love you. I mean, I have clients from 25 plus years ago calling me all the time. Hey, I'm doing this. Hey, you know, thank you for setting me up with this 20 years ago. Hey, remember when we talked about me doing this, you know, 15 years ago? Well, I just bought that, you know, Corvette that we had talked about for my 50th birthday. That's a call I got a couple of weeks ago, by the way, actual call. So being able to build those sort of relationships where they love you, but also coaching the clients as to how to position you in front of other people. Because if you go to a great restaurant, Armand, you're going to tell people about it, right?
Yeah.
Now, what if the owner of that restaurant, while you were there, came on out, sat down, talked with you for a couple of minutes, found out what you liked about the meal, what you didn't like, all those sort of things, and said, hey, by the way, here's a couple of coupons for your friends for 10% off. You cheer those.
Yeah, I would feel special, and I would definitely give those to friends and say, hey, this guy is cool.
Yeah. So not only was it a great experience, but they've coached you on how to share them for other people. Oh, and if it's like a restaurant that's convenient to get to, guess what? You're going back.
So from what I'm gathering, you teach people how to get positive referrals from your already existing customers, kind of turning your fans into super fans sort of thing.
Exactly. Not just super fans, but advocates and part of your marketing department. I would literally get calls on a regular basis. Hey, Joe, you don't know me. I'm a friend of so-and-so. They said I need to come and sit down with you. When are you available? It's very easy to build a business when people call you because of your reputation and how you have set it up to make it easy for your clients to introduce you. And so that really comes down to two main components. There's a skill set of how do you interact with your clients and how do you talk with them so that they want to introduce you to other people and make it easy for them. But then the bigger component is the will set. The being able to have the difficult conversations with your clients, being able to do the difficult things like picking up the phone to call new people, to get through the objections, to be able to put your ego aside and do what is right for the relationship so that it thrives over time. So the skill set and the will set are the two main areas that I work in my coaching with. And the will set is derived from everything that I've done outside the business world over the years, whether it's martial arts, running, being a special needs parent, being able to understand the psychology, the personal psychology there, and make yourself better is what led to the books and a bunch of the other things.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a lot to take into that. I mean, just especially me personally, what I do, it's funny you mentioned cold calling is because that's what I do for my job. But I've noticed the best way of getting results is actually having referrals come in. Those are the people that you can help the best.
It's 100 times more effective. So exactly. It's that much more efficient. The business, you know, when you're through the process of whatever it is you're trying to do with them, you're more likely to get them to actually take the actions that you want. They're more likely to remain a client over an extended period of time. So they're more sticky and they're more valuable to your organization. And then the last thing is that they are more likely to introduce you to other individuals. So literally cold calling versus working on an introduction based business, you know, is 100 times more efficient.
Yeah.
100 times.
And how does someone build a will set? Skill set seems like something that people are familiar with, but I don't know if everyone really knows what exactly a will set is and how you build that. So what's kind of like the process of doing that?
So the biggest thing about building a will set is challenging yourself, is having that standard of excellence of working towards something that requires you to grow. So becoming a champion is not about getting in the ring and beating the other person at that point. It's about what leads up to that for the 6 months, year, multiple years of getting up in the morning before the sun comes up and hitting the road, as Muhammad Ali talked about. It's about pushing yourself to your red line over and over and over again so that your capabilities expand dramatically. It is literally going into the ring against somebody 75 pounds heavier than you and fighting them and getting beaten up and not giving up and understanding where your capabilities lie and building that fighting spirit. It's like when I do ultra marathons, my first ultra marathon, 42 miles into it, I'm ready to give on up. I'm on emotional reserves. And one of my friends called me and they needed my help. And so the energy that I was using for that last 10 miles of the double marathon, I ended up having to expend to talk her off a ledge in some ways to help her out. But doing that made me realize how much more I had in the tank emotionally, even though physically I had nothing left at that point. Okay. I was literally a shambling monster at that point. And so, but doing that made it so that when I did my next ultra marathon 6 months later, and I went 10 miles further, I did 100 kilometers, which is 62 miles and change as opposed to 52 miles and change from a double marathon, I was actually able to do it in 3 hours less. Wow. And feel the next day be almost fine from it because I knew what I was capable of because I'd been there. So understanding your resilience, there's the saying that which does not kill me makes me stronger. Well, you push yourself almost to the point of getting killed. And then you recover and you can do it again and again. And this is one of the things that special needs parents discover is that, you know what? I can get up and do it again. I can do it again. I can do it again. And so having this deep resolve, the understanding that you can go further than other individuals, that you can have that difficult conversation with the person that you care about, even though it hurts, because you know that the conversation is what's needed to make sure that you still maintain that relationship long range.
Yeah.
So in every situation, we really have two choices. Okay. You can boil it down. There's multiple choices always, but they fall into two distinct categories, the easy choice and the right choice. The easy choice feels good in the moment. Okay. I'm going to eat this donut and I love donuts. Oh God, I love donuts. Donuts and Oreos are, I run lots of miles. So I can eat.
Oreo donut is what your specialty is.
Oh yeah. So, you know, eating the donut feels really good in the moment. It's the easy choice. But if you're doing that all the time, what's going to happen? You're going to have heart problems. You're going to have weight issues. Your joints are going to hurt. You're going to have all these other things. Okay. Smoking the cigarette gives you that quick hit. You feel good, but you get emphysema long range. Sitting on the couch, you know, eating Cheetos, watching The Bachelor feels good in the moment, but it doesn't help you pass your test. It doesn't help you build your career. So there's these long range things. Avoiding the conversation with the person that you care about their bad behavior right now is avoiding a little bit of pain. So it's the easy choice. But what ends up happening long range, if you don't have those difficult discussions with them, things get really bad with the relationship and it could explode and all that. Or you can have the harder choice right now. Okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to go run 5 kilometers, even though it's raining out. This is going to suck. I literally said that before my last rain run. This is going to suck, but it's going to make me better. Okay, so the harder choice, you know, the eating healthy, the cracking the book to study, the setting money aside for your kids' college education or for your retirement, the doing the harder thing now gives you better results and makes things easier over time. And so if you take the easy choice, typically it makes your arrow point down. If you take the harder choice now, it's going to suck for a little bit, but then your arrow points up. And eventually, yeah, if you're making a lot of good choices going up, the choices get relatively easier. And the difference between the easy choice and the right choice at those levels is extremely different overall.
Have you read the book Relentless by Tim Grover?
I've heard of it multiple times. It's actually on my list of things to read during my next retreat.
It seems like something you would really enjoy. He's the coach that trained Jordan, Kobe, Dwayne Wade, and everyone saw him as more of like a mindset coach than physical trainer. He's a physical trainer, but they went to him because he was a mindset coach. And it's
because
a lot
the mind's
like
much
champion.
More powerful than the body.
Yeah.
As David Goggins talks about, when you think you've got nothing left, when you're completely exhausted, when you think you're spent, you're only 40% of where you could be.
And when or how did you realize that in your life? Like, is there a particular moment when you had this breakthrough where you push past that 40% to see what your true potential was, and you could kind of look back and say, oh, I can do this in every aspect?
There's not one instance. There's been many small ones, like, you know, down in my master's dojang, down in the dungeon, as we'd call it. It's his basement, and in August it'd get like 95 degrees. It literally got so hot in there and so humid that it started raining in the room. That was awesome. It sucked getting there, but it was awesome. So, you know, doing that, when I was training for my black belt years and years ago, I mean, I was 150 pounds at almost 6 foot tall. And I fought Mike Tyson's former sparring partner. So this guy was 6'3", 240 pounds, wow, left-handed. And God, he bounced me off the walls, knocked me out of my feet. But he couldn't, you know, I was knocked out, but I was not out of the fight. I kept going. And so it's going beyond those limits and then recovering over and over again. And you realize how much further you can go. You don't roll off the couch and run a marathon typically. And you certainly don't roll off the couch and do like Barclays, the 100+ mile, you know, death race down in Tennessee, but you can build up to it. And so it is having things around you, or more importantly, people around you that challenge you, that demand more. So you might have had that teacher when you're in grade school is like, Armand, you can do more. I expect better from you. And what happened? You did better. They pushed you beyond what you thought was your limit, whether it was in school or whether it was that coach or whether it's that friend who like set an example of excellence that pulled you along. And so you setting up your environment, whether it's hiring the coach like Glover, whether it's the people around you, like my friends are like special forces individuals, and almost every single one of my friends has a PhD and they make fun of me because I only have 4 master's degrees. And you know, it's that environment of demanding more.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately, it can't be external. it needs to be you demand more of yourself. And once you can have enough of the external support and pushing, it literally bleeds into your soul and you start pushing yourself that way.
I really like that. And it's so important to have, not just, you can be as internal as possible. Cause I know people, like my youngest brother is very the most intrinsically motivated person that I've seen, but he also, because of that, surrounds himself around people who also have the same mindset, because he understands the importance of, it's not just you, it's also like the people you're around. You subconsciously take in their, you know, thoughts, ideas, what they say. The
iron sharpens iron, as the old saying goes. And you've heard that you're the average of the five people that you surround yourself with the most. So surround yourself with better people. If you've got people who, like, I've got a 15-year-old son, and some of his friends I'm not exactly a big fan of, because, you know, they don't lead him into good places. And I had a conversation with him about it. I'm like, dude, if I find you around this kid again, because he just got in trouble yet again, I'm going to shave your head. And my 15-year-old's got red curly hair that comes down to here that he loves. And so I made sure that he knows that this is not an idle threat, because a couple of his friends are really good kids. I talked to the parents and everything, but this one kid is not good. And so I'm like, you will not be around him, because that kid leads them into bad places. Having that great example that we talked about before happens all the time, but people also have these things that negatively influence them, whether it's the app on the phone that takes them to places that they shouldn't be, whether it's the person, whether it's going to, you know, this one club where bad things can happen. So people have that sort of environment around them too. And so James Clear in Atomic Habits talks about habit stacking, where you set things up to have a positive environment. He doesn't mention it in the book, but habit cracking is the reverse of that, where you remove those negative influences from you. Like James Clear talked about this one lady who was a smoker, then stopped smoking until she went on horseback with her friends again, and she felt the need to smoke. So eliminating those bad influences allows the better influences to carry more weight. So this is the whole idea behind nudge theory, which Thaler got the Nobel Prize in economics for, is setting up your environment for better choices. You don't want to eat junk food? Don't have junk food in the house. You're going to lose weight.
I was talking about that yesterday. Actually, the funny thing is Atomic Habits was the other book I was going to ask if you read. And I mean, it definitely seemed like so. When you were talking about you make a good choice, the arrow points up. You make a bad choice, the arrow points down. And it's like the interesting thing is in the mornings, that's why it's so important, I think, to have a strong, solid start to your day, because that arrow, the morning arrow is so much stronger than the rest of the day, and it'll kind of determine
lot of other things around that. I have a saying, win the morning, win the day. And I get up at 4:30 in the morning. I've always been a farm kid, so, you know, morning is in my blood, but I get up, and what do you do those first couple of minutes to set the day? So I get up, I go grab my cup of coffee. I have a cup of coffee set aside and the coffee pot ready to go. So I turn the coffee pot on to make the new coffee. I have the first one to basically get going. I start drinking it. I sit down and I read. And I read, last year it was Daily Stoic. Right now it's the Daily Laws by Robert Greene. I read my own book every single day. Okay. And do the action items. And then I get up and I work out. And I work out for roughly 20, 30 minutes to get the blood going, get my mind going. One of the things that I do is I do 100 punches each morning, each hand, as I have done for decades. I've done over 10 million punches per hand at this point. So that's part of my morning routine. Boom. Then when I finish that workout, I sit down and I start writing. I'll write in my journal or write poetry. That's how I wrote the book. Every single morning, I would sit down and I'd write for at least 2 days worth of the book. I get everything out of my head. Then I either make breakfast or I do a second small workout. Then I get ready to, you know, proceed with my day from there. So
how...
By 8 o'clock in the morning, I've already accomplished more than most humans do in an entire day.
Yeah. I was, I got excited to ask, how important would you say consistency is to the amount of success that you've achieved?
It is absolutely critical. If you haven't noticed, I'm ADHD. I wasn't diagnosed until I was an adult, but I have like 20 browser tabs open and there's probably circus music playing someplace, but you set things up. You need that consistency. So one of the things that I talk about when I'm coaching business people is what's that one thing you need to do every single day for your business, whether it's pick up the phone 20 times or get 4 introductions or, you know, have one person that you're asking to buy your product, whatever that is, you need to do that every single day. No goose eggs. And you set your day up so that every single day you can do that. And if that's what you need to do on a daily basis to contribute to your weekly, monthly, and yearly success, it doesn't matter what else happens. If you did that one thing, that is a victory for the day.
Yeah.
And so I was coaching a guy this morning and we reviewed his past week and he has done what he needs to do every single day. Yes, he hasn't had, it's activity based for him. He hasn't had tremendous success yet, but he can see it coming and he can feel the change in himself, not just in terms of his energy, but his attitude and the amount of time that he's spending per day in client facing activities has grown because he's doing that one thing every single morning. So have that consistency. Even on the weekend, I'm still up before 6 a.m. So yeah, I might sleep in for an extra half hour, but it's not like I'm sleeping in until 11 a.m. and staying out to 2 on the weekends, then trying to get back into the groove. Your business day starts the day before.
You can really feel momentum, especially when you are being consistent with something. It may not be like the guy you're coaching. You may not see the results right there, but you can feel when you're reaching the edge and you're about to push over and get the results that you desire.
And unfortunately, people quit before they get it because James Clear says it takes 7 to 21 days or whatever to establish a habit. If it's built off of a habit stack, it's on that short side, 7 days. If it's longer, it's 21 days. But let's say that you've gone to the gym for 2 weeks. You're hungry, you know, you're sore. Okay. You're not necessarily seeing any physical change yet. At 2 weeks in, you probably aren't even seeing a change on the scale or anything else, but other people looking at you can start to see the change. And so having somebody reinforce that you're doing the right things by saying, good job, man, having that little validation. Yes, we don't want to be externally motivated, but a little external validation, the pat on the back, the gold star from somebody every once in a while does carry some weight.
Yeah, I agree. And you really helped a light bulb go off in my head with the whole, I kind of wondered the concept of, you know, that image of someone like digging for gold and then they stop right before the gold. And then that other person keeps digging and finds it.
Exactly.
I always kind of wondered how, I know that that concept is around since, you know, the beginning of time, but I always wondered why is it that people stop right before they're about to reach success. And I don't know why I never put two and two together, but yeah, it's because you're not seeing results for all your hard work. And that is incredibly frustrating sometimes.
And that's one of the reasons why it's good to have a mentor who's been there, who can say, no, you're doing the right things. Yeah. Keep it up. You know, keep picking up the phone. You know, you're hitting the short-term metrics that will lead to long-term success, but we don't see it. And so partially because of the social media world, you know, everybody's comparing the start of their fitness journey with the person that they see on Instagram who's been working out for 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're not comparing themselves to other people at the same point in the journey.
It's important to have someone in your life that's been there who sees the signs and says, you're on the right path. I agree. And now what about exactly? What exactly is that? I saw it's fairly new. You started earlier this year.
So exactly. Actually, that was the call I had before is a dating company. So, you know, Tinder and Bumble and all these other ones, but we're actually, instead of being visually focused, because I mean, I'm not the best looking guy in the world. I got a face made for radio. So the average female on Tinder gets like 60% likes, the average guy gets 4%. And if you're below average looks like me, you know, you're down to, you know, nobody wants to talk to you, even if you do have a sparkling personality. So we use actually psychometric testing across a whole variety of metrics and match people there. And you do not get to see the other person until you've actually started building the relationship. So it's blurred out. So you can see, okay, yeah, I got a little goofy hair and, you know, I got bright pink skin. That's about all you could tell. And the more conversations that you have, the less blurred the picture is. So you start building intimacy because trust is based on intimacy, and intimacy is partially based upon revealing of information and time. But the entire, you know, online dating world, 90%+ of it is looks based. So if we eliminate that, then we can start allowing people to build more real relationships. And as I said, in this social media world where somebody can have 15 different dating apps on their phone, even if they're married, that they can create these illusions and all this, it allows us to have much more of what the Scottish psychologist Laird talks about, true self versus the true self, false self dynamic, which is literally everywhere, whether it's people's relationships, sales, business, all that. This helps strip a lot of that away and allow a lot more of that true self to true self conversation.
In an industry that is so based on surface level attraction, what are you doing differently to break out of that?
Well, that's where the psychometric testing comes from. So people, when they join the company, or when they start using the app, they actually have to go through a whole series of tests to, you know, and it's not like we're putting people in this pile, but it gives a much better look at who they are so it could be a good match. So let's look at sports for an example. All right, let's take baseball because I'm a baseball player. All right, somebody who's got a left-handed power swing is going to be much better suited for Yankee Stadium than they are in, say, out in San Francisco. Okay. The dimensions are different. The wind is different, all that. So from Babe Ruth to today, left-handed sluggers love playing in Yankee Stadium because of the way it's designed. So if you've got a team where you've got certain constraints, but you're playing in a ballpark like that, you're going to look for somebody who wants to be able to hit in that. And if you're recruiting a pitcher, guess what? Somebody who is a fly ball pitcher, so everybody gets good launch angle and hits hard, is probably not going to be the person that you want playing in a batter-friendly stadium.
Correct.
So it's, you know, yeah, it's not a perfect science, but if we know, okay, this person has a huge fly ball rate and, you know, left-handed hitters, you know, pummel them, probably not the best person to try and have starting a game in Yankee Stadium, whether it's playing for the Yankees or an opposing pitcher that's brought on in for a series.
That's interesting.
So it's having that understanding of who you are and what you're looking for to be able to build a better relationship. So for example, if you look at the big five personality traits, openness and conscientiousness are two of the determinants, okay? Conscientiousness is a reflection of work ethic, diligence in work, and all that. I am off the charts with that. So a good friendship for me has to at least be average. And this is a friendship or relationship or whatever. Somebody who's a complete and total, you know, mess on that front, I almost, you know, dropped some, I don't know if I can swear on the podcast. So
say what you will.
All right. So somebody who's a complete
just be
total
you.
Shit
That's
show,
all I ask. All I ask, just be you.
All right. Somebody who's a complete total shit show and dumpster fire, guess what? I'm not probably not going to have a good long-term friendship or relationship with them because of that. It might be short-term interesting, you know, a lot of fun to go drink with them for a night or, you know, sit back, you know, basically eat popcorn, watch, you know, the show of what they're going to do. But that's not a good fundamental thing.
Yeah. And I also totally have, see that. I once heard in a conversation someone say, I can't be with anyone who's got their shit together. And I was just like, why? That makes no sense. But I guess that's me. That's who I am. I wouldn't get along with people like that as well.
Yeah. So as one of my friends said, you know, I don't have to only love the broken ones. And so, you know, second son syndrome, and, you know, I have the Michelangelo phenomenon a lot that I see the potential in people, but I need to remember that. No, it's not my job to save the entire world. It's not my job to help everybody, you know, better to
not take everybody wants help.
Exactly. And they're going to continue on their path because they're making that easy choice very often. And they like going there because they haven't had to deal with the consequences necessarily. So another thing is Dow did her research, and roughly 40% of the population has what would be considered an open or growth mindset. Okay. And I'm pretty extreme on that side too. So if somebody has a fixed mindset, they're not going to be a good fit with me as a person long range, which is one of the reasons why I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always taken the risk. I've always been trying to personally develop myself, human Kaizen expert, as we say, everyday excellence, always trying to strive and grow versus somebody who's totally okay with just working their 9 to 5 and then coming home and, you know, watching TV. I can't deal with that because that's not who I am. So understanding that is in terms of your dynamic, you tend to shift one way or another. So like your brother, who's one of the most intrinsically motivated people that you know, he also, as you said, surrounds himself with people that push him further. Okay. So that's where you have the combination of nature and nurture aligning to create an outcome that is a little bit more extreme.
Yeah.
You know, on the good side or the bad side.
I see. And speaking of entrepreneurship, when and how did that journey start for you?
I mean, my dad founded his own company when I was a kid as a consultant. And so that was always something that I saw and wanted to do. My mom was an educator and a nun, my dad, army, and then a consultant. So I had these influences, which the more that you talk to me, you see these things running through me pretty heavily. But I mean, I grew up on the farm and we had to do the chores and all that. But at 12 years old, I was tutoring other kids because I was the smart kid. And so I realized I can make a lot of money working on my own. You know, if I went and had a normal job, you know, I would be have to like wear the uniform and, you know, clean out the garbage container at, you know, Stortz or Burger King or whatever, and have to wear the hairnet and dress that way. And I'd have to work just these particular hours. And I could only make as much money as they let me. Hmm. Versus if I'm, you know, tutoring, making 4 times as much per hour, how many hours a week can I work?
Yeah.
And I get to choose who I work with. Oh, that guy, he's a jerk. I don't want to accept him as a client.
That's a big one, choosing who you work with.
Yeah. So even when I was building my financial services career, I would tell people, I'm interviewing you as much as you're interviewing me, because if I'm going to be working with you for the next 30, 40 years, I need to make sure that we get along and that we have fundamental belief systems that align. Because if not, we're not going to like working with each other. You're going to be unhappy. I'm going to be unhappy. So let's make sure that we have this understanding early on.
I think it's great that even in the beginning, you're already thinking working with you and for 30 to 40 years, you're already thinking long-term and that you're keeping this customer. That's pretty cool. That's a good mindset.
And also I'm looking at as how do I maximize the value for the customer and for me? I mean, too many people are like trying to get as much as they can in the first deal and they screw the other person over. And that creates a bad relationship. That also creates a bad reputation versus doing the right thing for them and trusting that if I'm doing the right thing and we're, this is a fundamentally good person and we've communicated the relationship properly, we're going to be able to work together for years and years. There's going to be a huge amount of trust. I'll be able to have dramatic impact on them. They're going to help me. And ultimately, they become a fan of mine. And that builds your reputation out in the marketplace, which allows your business to then be sustainable and growable.
Yeah, interesting. And it seemed okay. So it's, you've done so much and it seems like you've lived like a couple different lifetimes from your career before starting your own company. You've done a couple things and then you've started a couple companies. It sounds like you've faced a lot of like severe stress. What are some of the things you do to keep yourself going and not burning out when that's happening? I mean, also physically too, if you're running ultra marathon, that's not just severe stress. I mean, mentally, but your body's going through so much. Like, how are you going?
I mean, One of the things is I have a physiotherapist I see on a regular basis, Dr. Barb Rabad. Thank you, Barb.
Shout out, Barb.
Her office is downstairs from mine, and she puts me back together again after each Ragnar and all that. I was training for a 125 kilometer race. I broke my leg, hairline fracture, in addition to spraining the ankle and separating all the bones and everything. So I haven't been allowed to run for almost 3 months, but she's been putting me back together again. So hopefully I can start running soon. So it's taking care of that. It's, I've never slept a lot, but I still get 5 hours of sleep a night. And when my body is under stress, I actually force myself to get more rest. It's what you consume. My Taekwondo master taught us early on, you dig your grave with your teeth. So eating healthy, you know, not drinking too much, but you know, I'm Irish German. I like to drink, obviously.
Yeah,
you know, have my Guinness, but it's it's okay. I'm having X, not X plus. It's getting the sleep. It's the recovery, whether it's getting the massage or taking the long soak or stretching. You know, taking amino acids after a hard workout so that your body can help rebuild and recover itself. So diet and exercise and all those things. It's the mental component. Sometimes you need a day off. Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need mental health or you day. So it's having that. It's having the right people around you. It's building in breaks. So with marathon runners, you know, we cycle in terms of building up your training and then you taper a little bit before the race. You know, with martial artists, you know, you start really training hard for a particular tournament 6 to 8 weeks beforehand so that you're peaking that particular day or week. And, you know, you take a half day the day before, you do a light workout that day, but you still have basically a full tank for that event. So it's things like that. It is having the social community. COVID has been really bad for extroverts and introverts. It's actually hurt them a lot of ways too, especially those of us who physical touch is like my primary love language. So not having people around to actually interact with. So finding ways to do that. So social media, not in the voyeuristic way where you're looking at Instagram and all these other things, but using it as a connection. So reaching out to your friends, like today is one of my good friend's birthdays. So at 12:01, I sent her a message, happy birthday, like I've done for multiple years. Haven't heard back from her yet, but you know what? It's these little things. I started using Marco Polo with my best friend from high school a couple of months ago because she's like, hey, this is awesome. And so throughout the day, I'll get like a little 15 to 20 second video from her and hear her voice and see her face, see her smiling, you know, and things aren't going great. She'll ask me to reach out to her, you know, so using text, just all these different things to help these social connections. And this is one of the things that the gerontologists talk about is that you need to have your physical strength. You need to be intellectually stimulated, which I do that constantly for work, but you also need these social connections, and that actually staves off the aging process.
Wow.
It's also a stress reduction way, is to make sure that you're doing these things on a regular basis. And sometimes you ramp it up or down in particular things. Like sometimes I just need a little time to myself. I'll go out in the woods and go for a walk for an hour. Sometimes you need more human contact. Sometimes your body needs a cheeseburger. You know, it's just telling you that. So you learn to listen to yourself and having people who are willing to tell you the truth, even if you don't want to hear it, those difficult conversations we talked about earlier, having people around you to be that feedback mechanism will help you in a lot of ways. Because even when you're pretty good at seeing the signs in yourself, sometimes you need to be reminded, hey, you're no good to me if you're broken.
Yeah. First of all, you dig your grave with your teeth. Excellent. Excellent quote. I really like that. And then also it seems like we keep going back to the concept of what you surround yourself with, what you put in yourself, whether it's content, food, friendships, whose love you're taking, like all these things really impact what you're doing in your, how you're
and that comes down to individual choice. in so many ways. You choose who you interact with. You choose what food you're buying. You choose the music you listen to or how you allocate your time. You choose that. And so every single day, the average person makes between 10 and 15,000 micro decisions, little choices.
Wow.
Okay. And as Colossus tells Deadpool in Deadpool 2, 4 or 5 moments. For a hero, it's 4 or 5 big moments, you know, whether to do the bad thing or not or what have you. But for an individual on a daily basis, an average Joe like us, 4 or 5 micro decisions determines whether that day ends up being a positive or a negative.
Yeah. And I'm sure anyone listening can think of at least 2 or 3 that come right to their head where either they did or didn't do at whatever point they are at in their day right now. Those moments.
And a corollary to that is that you can set the stage a lot of ways. I remember Tony Robbins talking about a study that Harvard did where they had people hold a cup of coffee. Is either a hot coffee or a cold coffee. And then a couple hours later, read a story. And what was their interpretation of the people? And the people who held a hot cup of coffee, 80% of them said those people were warm and friendly. People who held iced coffee, 80% of the people said that those individuals were cold and distant. So 75%+ of the thoughts that we have on a daily basis are routine. We're just having them over and over again. So if you can set up the environment to have better influences, that's going to make it easier to make those 4 or 5 better choices throughout the
day.
So when I've got a good friend who's in the Dutch military and we were studying PTSD and things. And one of the things that they found is that people get locked in these habits, especially if they've got trauma or PTSD. Hmm. So we literally had this one guy take the chair where he always sat having negative thoughts and burn the chair.
That's kind of cool.
Change the environment. When I'm coaching somebody to have better performance, I literally make them go and rearrange their office. So the visual cues that they have are completely different. Even if it's just switching their desk around and like changing what's hanging on the wall, moving them to different places, just doing that changes the environment enough to make the decisions a little bit different. And it's the old nudge theory of putting fruit there instead of candy, you know, these little things to make the better choice be slightly better. And that's one of the things I was taught by fraternity years and years ago is make the less bad choice. So if you can set your environment up to make the less bad choice, the better choice consistently over a day, week, month, year, you're going to have a better outcome simply because you made it easier to do the right thing.
That's pretty cool that you learned that in your fraternity. My fraternity just taught me how to play beer pong. That's about it. But
I learned that too. And tap a keg. But you know, things that we used to teach freshmen, and this is going back 30 years ago, you're going to learn how to change your oil. You're going to learn how to change a tire. You're going to learn how to tie a tie. You're going to learn how to set a table properly. You're going to learn to cook a meal for 50 people. These are things that every single person learned. You're going to learn how to study. You're going to learn how to iron a shirt. So these are fundamental skills that we still use decades later, but it also is teaching us, no, you're a grown up now. You're responsible for your own decisions. Mom's not going to do your laundry. You know, your parents aren't going to come tuck you into bed or make your food. You need to start being self-reliant. And that's part of the hero's journey that Joseph Campbell talks about. And one of the things that we've seen that have been an issue with the younger generations is that there's too many snowplow parents making things too easy for them.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Or I actually have a quote on my wall from Goethe. Too many parents make life hard for their children by trying too zealously to make it easy for them. And so it goes back to those easy choices or hard choices that we talked about earlier. If you choose to make the hard choice now, life becomes easier down the road.
And you mentioned a routine a little bit earlier. We talked about your daily routine, which is excellent. That was one thing that I was curious about. And it seems like you have a pretty set and established consistent routine. But what about how can someone make a routine out of excellence, out of making that harder choice? What can someone do to become more excellent?
Well, part of it's awareness. You know, so if they listen to this podcast, they're going to understand that in each choice, there's two branches, the easy branch and the right branch. So just being aware of that is part of it. Hmm. Part of it is having other people around you to give you that feedback. So having better friends around you, having an accountability partner, you know, that's why we have lifting partners and running partners so that we can get the feedback, but also we have that accountability because I'm not going to miss a run with my running partner because it's not fair to them. I let them down.
Yeah.
Okay. Other things are get around good habits. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of short motivational videos on YouTube, you know, where it's 5 or 10 minutes long. So if I'm, you know, doing the dishes, I'm listening to something like that, which programs your mind to be more aware of it. You have what's called neuroplasticity in your brain, where it will literally rewire itself. So the software in our brain and the hardware, actually, we can reprogram through what we expose ourselves to. And so playing something like that, you know, I'll be in the shower and I'll have something playing while I'm getting myself cleaned. And it's one of those little decisions that, how much time does that take me? It takes me 5 seconds to choose something to start playing before I jump into the shower. Okay. But even though I'm not fully focused on it, it's still influencing me while I'm doing something else. So I'll listen to things while I'm driving. I'll do stuff like that. It's reading on a regular basis. What do you read? And that's one of the reasons why I wrote Everyday Excellence, so that it is a daily multivitamin for life, whether it's going to help with your relationships, your communication, your mental health, your physical health, your career, having those little things on a daily basis, having that consistent effort is what produces the changes. You don't go and run a marathon by rolling off the couch and just doing it, nor do you do it by just getting up and doing, you know, 1 mile every single day and compounding it. You get up and you do a mile. And then the next day you go a little bit further and then a little bit further. And so you start a baseline and you consistently do things, but then you amp up the difficulty. You push yourself a little harder, which goes back to that resilience we were talking about earlier, is that if you have a goal, your goal is to be excellent, goal is to make $1 million, you know, lose weight, you know, what, buy a house, what have you. You need to say, okay, that's my ultimate goal, but here's the things I do today. And every single day, commit to what you need to do and then expand your vision and the effort on a regular basis. So to save 20% for retirement, you don't start off saving 20% day one. You might only be able to save 4%.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you start saving 4%, you get used to that, and then you amp that up a little bit. You go to saving 4.5%. Then you pay off, you know, that credit card bill and you can take half that money and you can use that for saving. So you go to 5% and then you get a raise so you can increase it, you know, a little bit more. So you go to 6%. And over time, you build up to being on path for what you want to do. And that's like excellence. Okay. You start eating slightly healthier. Okay. No more Cheetos in the house. Okay. Then, okay, I'm going to bring in apples. Okay, I'm going to cook one time a week more so that's slightly healthy. Hey, I'm going to, you know, use a little bit less fat and a little bit more spices, you know, to get the same sort of flavor because it's better for me. And it's those little choices compounded. So you have to decide, I'm going to start, and then you have to decide, I'm going to keep doing it even when it starts getting a little difficult.
And you mentioned a little bit about habits that you added to make this happen, but what habits have you had to remove from your life in order to be excellent?
Oh, I'm glad you asked this because this sucks. Okay. I'm going to really admit taking some of these things away. So like I pulled off a bunch of apps from my phone. Like I had some games that I played that I really liked. I mean, you can see I've got Thor up there. I'm a huge Marvel Comics fan. So I used to play a bunch of games on my phone. I took them off my phone. Okay. So that saved me. Wasn't, you know, that much. It was a half hour, 45 minutes a day. And I'd be doing it while I was doing other things.
But that compounds. But
Yeah, but that's a half hour that I could shift to doing something more productive. Okay. So I had some apps on my phone, communication apps, where, you know, it wasn't adding that much value to my life. It was taking some time. Yeah. So I pulled it off. Other things that I've done is, like, I turned my phone on do not disturb for certain periods throughout the day, because I get lots of text messages and notifications, all that. So I turn my phone completely off. It's sitting over there charging right now. Maybe it's not charging. But so for 45 minutes or an hour, I don't have those sort of distractions going on. So cutting out certain things like that. You know, I wanted to not drink as much, so I just didn't buy any beer. Okay. There's no beer in my house right now. So I had the two beers that I bought to have on St. Patrick's Day, and I haven't touched one
Guinness?
Since. Of course. Actually, I had a Murphy's Irish Stout too that I was able to find, so which I like even more than Guinness. So, nice. But you know, little things like that. It's the micro decisions throughout the day of,
yeah,
you know, removing things or adding things on in.
So, what about this is actually just a random question that came up to me, but what do you think about grocery shopping on a good micro decision day versus a bad micro decision day?
How do you think that would go? The old thing, if you never shop when you're hungry,
yeah, because,
oh, you know, I can just grab one thing of Oreos,
yeah,
not a big deal, or I'll grab this. So, you know, one, eat before you go on in, and two, look at what your goal is beforehand, because this is what that presetting the mindset we talked about earlier. If you're focused on losing weight, look at healthy meals before going on it. So just browse, you know, on your phone for a couple minutes, healthy things. If you're trying, you know, look at pictures of that outfit that you want to wear. Look at pictures of the race that you want to do. Okay. Have that healthy mindset before you go to go shopping, and your choices will tend to be a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
This is how you should approach everything. So like if you're going into a meeting with your boss, how do you preset yourself to get a better outcome? So one of the things that some research that we did is using the Superman pose or the Rocky pose. So, you know, Superman pose like this, uh-huh, you know, Rocky. Okay, if you hold that pose for 30 seconds, it actually decreases the bad hormones in your system, the stress hormones and all that, and relaxes you. You become more productive for a period of time after that.
Interesting.
Okay, yeah, so if you've got a sales meeting, go into the bathroom and, you know, assume the Rocky pose for 30 seconds beforehand, and you're more likely to get the sale. If you're going to have a negotiation with your boss, do the same thing. If you're going to have a conversation that you don't want to have, this helps mentally and physically prep you for it. It's psychosomatic. Assuming this position actually changes the biochemistry and makes you more productive and more effective. So doing little things like this before you have to do something. So when I'm coaching salespeople, you know, we tell them to smile beforehand because the smile can come on through. I make them assume that pose and review their language for about 1 minute before they start dialing for appointments, because you literally will see they are 10 to 15% more effective.
It's that's something really important about body language that I wish more people understood, is it's not so much, or it's not more your, like your thoughts, mind, whatever is affected by your own body language, but it can also, the reverse could be true. Like your poses that you put on yourself will help influence your thoughts and mind, as long as you're conscious about it. If you're conscious of the fact that, like, it's one thing they tell cold callers all the time, smile and dial. For some reason, not only does it convey itself through your tone of voice, like people can hear you smiling, but you also feel it. And something so important of when you're cold calling and talking to people who really don't want to answer the phone to you is being confident and having that smile and having open body language. Like when I make calls, I'm standing tall, walking around my room, because that's how I feel comfortable, is pacing and talking.
You want some insight into that?
Yeah.
So roughly 93% of communication is not the words that are being utilized.
Yeah.
Almost half of it is the tone, the cadence, the tenor. So things like that. So if you're on just a audio call, people can't notice that, you know, how I'm sitting back and taking up more space, assuming an alpha position, things like that, but they can hear it. And so understanding these things and applying them to how you interact can prep for a better outcome.
Yeah, totally agree.
And so one of the things that I'm going to tell you, Armand, is use music too. So for example, for my entire career, I found this one song early on, Princes of the Universe by Queen, the theme to Highlander. So, you know, guys in kilts cutting people's heads off. It's perfect for me. Especially if you listen to the verbiage, here we are born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe. My future's in my own hand. You're a cold caller. Okay. It's the exact same thing. So, but that song, I would play it every morning on the way from the gym to my office. It was two times through, and it would mentally prep me for it. So before any conference call that I do, before any big presentation, before not this podcast, but the one that I did previously, because I was running late and I apologized for it, I play that song and I can just hear the opening strains and it flips the switch. Here we are. Okay. I'm ready to go. Find that song for you. For
you some got people, your own theme it's, music.
Yeah, it literally is. It's your walk-up music, like a wrestler. Okay? So for some people, it's Lose Yourself by Eminem. For some people, it's Fight Song by Rachel Patton. I've got one guy who I worked with years ago who's an opera singer by training, and it was the Hallelujah choruses. Okay? But find that song that speaks to you on a visceral gut level that just becomes, yes. Okay. And play it before every one of these big things, because it will change your biochemistry and it will make you believe that you're ready for that. So you become more ready for that interaction.
Yeah. And the more you probably reinforce it, your brain just knows that it's ready to go into that
zone. Exactly. So all I need is that opening strain. Boom. And I'm ready to go.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. I like that. I'm going to have to give that a try. And
so email me what your song is after you figure
I will. I will. It'll take some music is a really big part of my life. I don't know if you can tell all the,
I saw the guitarist
I have there. It'll take me some time to figure it out, but I have a couple songs in mind. Now to change gears to go on a little more fun hobby creative spot. This is a good segue is first of all, what does work-life balance look like for you? Cause it sounds like you do a lot. How do you, you know, have fun along the way?
So one of the things is that I integrate fun throughout whatever it is that I do. As you can tell, I'm sort of a goofball, and you know, we've had a bunch of laughter throughout what we've had here. So integrating that into everything that you're doing, being very much you in terms of how you approach things, allows you to have a lower stress environment overall. So as I tell people, be the best version of you instead of being a cheap clone of me, because you never want to be me. Okay. But so that one reduces your stress overall. It's more you stress as opposed to distress, which is a fundamental difference in terms of how it impacts your body. But other things around it is make sure that you take the time for the things that you want. So like I literally allocate a little bit of time, mid-morning, early afternoon and later in the afternoon to literally goof around. Okay. So I have, it's not my schedule, but it's planned in terms of some of the stuff where I can take 5 minutes to just go do other things, where I can walk around the building a few times, which is a big thing. The human mind does not like linear things. So like if you look behind me, you know, my bookcase is straight up and down and the books are all straight. In nature, other than crystals, nothing is straight. It's all curved.
Yeah.
It's textured. So your mind when it's seeing this linear stuff, whether it's in a school or a prison or the office, they're designed like this, and it messes with your mind over time. So every couple hours, I literally go outside, walk out, walk down the stairs, walk around the building once or twice, look at the leaves, look at the trees. If it's cold out, I feel the wind and the cold on my face, the sun on good days, the rain today. So whatever it is, it completely changes the stimulation that you're getting, which then lets your brain reset itself and be more productive. So doing that a couple of times throughout a day is critical.
Yeah.
Finding time for the things that you enjoy, like reaching out to your friends that I talked about earlier, like taking a couple of minutes to get some music in there, like, you know, taking the time to walk out, grab your lunch from the car and come back in so that you're just resetting. Things like that. I do my workouts in the morning just so my day doesn't get away. I've got certain other things that I do, like I'm a Cub Scout pack master. I do Boy Scouts with the boys. I'm a member of a couple of different societies, the Ancient Order, Hibernians, do stuff with my fraternity. So I have those things scattered throughout. I don't have as much time to do all those as I would like.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, the way of life as it is.
Yeah.
Right now, I got three kids, two are special needs. You know, so I've got these other things going on, but carving out enough time for that. And then every once in a while, just saying, I need that me day. I need the afternoon to go take a hike, you know? So that's why you be so productive early on. If I can accomplish most of what I need to do before 9 or 10 in the morning, that means that I'm either in the bonus round for the rest of the day, if you're looking at it from a sales point of view, or you know what, I'm just getting that much further ahead on my overall goals of like selling a million books or what have you. So things like that, that you build on in to make sure that you have some flexibility. And what you were saying before, I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, yeah, I am incredibly driven. I'm like probably off the chart when it comes to conscientiousness. I probably accomplished more in 1 year than most people do in a lifetime. But I haven't always been this way. I've worked up to being able to run at that level.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Last year, I did 2 ultra marathons. I did a Ragnar. I did a couple other big races. I published 2 books. I finished a master's degree. You know, and I spent a ton of time with my kids. That's pretty damn good. You know, what am I doing this year? Okay, I've got another book ready to go. I'm working on writing yet another one. Hopefully, I'll be able to run an ultra marathon or two this year. Hopefully, rank up in Taekwondo, take care of some other stuff. So those are big accomplishments,
But
not everybody needs to have those. If you have these little things that are just as important to you, like taking that weekend with your kids at the cabin where the phone's completely turned off and you're just there with them, that is an important goal for certain people. I do that a couple of times throughout the summer. If it's running your first 5K, if that's important to you, well, structure your life around it so that you can accomplish that thing. And at the start of the year, I tell people write down the things that you want to achieve for the year, whether it's work, you know, a work-related, a relationship-related, a health-related thing, a learning goal very often. And at the end of the year, make sure you reflect to see if you achieved it or not. So we do this in business all the time. Why aren't people doing it in their life on a more often basis? Why aren't they sitting down on Sunday evening and looking at their sweetie and saying, hey, this past week, these were the good things, these were the bad things. What do we want to make sure that we're focused on in the next week?
Yeah,
why do we do it in business, but not on a personal basis?
Even on a personal basis, I think it's really important to set quarterly goals and just kind of go over every few months. Am I on the right path to doing what I set out to do at the beginning of the year? Like, what do I need to adjust? How can I get back on the path if I'm not? If I am, then good job. It's like, it's a nice way of keeping yourself on track. Cause it's one thing to set goals at the beginning of the year and check them at the end of the year. But if you're not,
that's not a goal then.
Yeah. You're not,
if you don't know exactly
looking,
where you are.
Yeah.
That's why they keep scoring games.
You know?
So I'm going to turn it around on you, Armand. How are you doing towards your goals?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. Yeah. I've been pretty proud of myself. There's been a month.
You just
or
smiled.
So.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing pretty good. I'm really happy. I mean, this podcast is one of the goals. I'm actually doing really well. Thanks for bringing me to smile yet again. But actually, another thing I did want to talk about was martial arts, because when I've done a couple different martial arts, but I was actually second degree in Taekwondo when I was younger. So that was something that I grew up doing. Kind of fell off. But what's your Taekwondo journey been like? And do you do any other martial arts?
So in terms of Taekwondo, I do Chungdukwan Taekwondo, which is old school. I mean, we still punch people in the head. So
nice.
So in fact, I used to get
that,
in trouble.
That sounds like fun.
I still punch people. And as you see, I'm a relatively skinny guy. The guys that I trained with were monsters. Okay. Like this one guy, Eddie, who passed on a couple of years ago, was a maximum security lockup guy. And we used to joke that he bench pressed Volkswagens because he was just boom. Okay. My Taekwondo master is 77 years old and incline pressed 500 pounds a couple of weeks ago.
What?
Yeah.
77.
Yeah. 5'5" on a good day.
Also, the fact that that's on an incline is pretty nuts.
Yeah. So I can't do that, by the way. So, you know, where was I going with this? Oh, so martial arts. So I always learned to punch above my weight. And it's a good thing that I'm Irish and have a thick skull because I had to with these guys. But it goes back to that training or, you know, being around people better than you. That was the standard that was set for me. And that's the standard that I set for my students is, look, I don't care if you're a scrawny nerd from RPI. You're going to have to compete against people who are physically much more imposing. So you need to be better. You need to train harder. You need to train longer. You need to train smarter. And so they used to call me the computer because my brain just never turned off, even in martial arts. And so everybody was much more physically gifted than I was, but I would outwork them and I would outthink them. And I just developed an understanding, you know, as Sun Tzu says, the victorious general has done 1,000 calculations as castle ere the battle, you know, so I took that approach, and he who knows his enemy and himself will always be victorious. So understanding that, having the intellectual combined with the actual physical, the, you know, just repetitions, the 10 million plus punches gives you the advantage overall. So I've been doing Taekwondo since I was 13 years old, so 35 plus years at this point. And that's been my primary. I've had a bunch of injuries along the way, so things have changed a little bit. But we also cross-trained very heavily. So my master's best friend was Tomo Kadachi, who was the world judo champion. So we cross-trained judo on a regular basis. We did boxing. I mean, I actually fought in the Tough Man when I was 22, 23 years old. Okay. I was actually too light, so they wouldn't let me fight. So I pulled on my cowboy boots and chugged a pitcher of beer. And I made the weight limit by 1 ounce to make the minimum weight. Yep.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So I wanted to fight. And so you do what you have to. So it's having these different influences that help overall become a better individual, because it's like writing. Okay, I could just study Shakespeare and I could write beautiful sonnets, you know, within that constraint. But I also studied, you know, James Joyce and all these others, Rumi, Pierre Gente, all these other influences. So you develop your own capability that's based on who you are. Bruce Lee actually had one leg that was slightly shorter than the other. People don't realize this. And that's the reason why he did all the spinning kicks and did them so tremendously, because he understood what was best for him and his body and his constraints. So learning and exposing yourself to all these different concepts, these ideas, and delving deeply into them, not just being surface on things, but actually deep dive in a lot of them, allows you to put together who you are overall. And I don't care if it's martial arts or philosophy, writing, musical influence, cooking, you know, your personality, by having all these multiple influences that you can deep dive on, then allows you to be able to put together something that is so much better. And as one of my friends told me years and years ago, when I was getting ready to do a speaking engagement, he's like, you're not, you know, this guy, you're not this guy, you're not this guy. These who are friends of mine who are big time speakers. He's like, you're Joe Templin. be Joe. Okay. I was reminded, I'm not Bill Durkee. I'm not Master Grant. I'm not Eddie Kaczynski. I'm Joe Templin. Fight like Joe Templin. So understand your influences, broaden your horizons, learn from all these other individuals, but learn components and what works and what doesn't, and integrate it to be the best you. And that is the definition of true excellence, discovering and ultimately becoming.
Yeah. And so important to, you can take influences from other people and you can see what you like from their styles, but to try and be someone else will never work out. There's only one of you in the world. So why would you be any different? The way I see it, you take other skills and like little tactics, little tricks that other people do that works with your strengths. But if they don't work, don't do them just because your idol does them. They became where they are by doing what works.
By being them.
Yeah. Interesting. And another thing is, you said you became where you were by outworking everybody in martial arts. And I heard in another podcast you did that you actually started running ultra marathons to supplement your martial arts. Yep. What part did you go, I'm going to do ultra marathons, like not even marathons. You're like, I'm not just going to run. I'm not just going to do it. I'm going to do the toughest form. I'm going to run 100 miles straight. And that's that.
All right, you want to know the real story? Yeah. I hate running.
You know, most good runners do. I don't
okay. It. So I heard David Goggins say this. I'm like, okay, I don't feel quite so bad about, not loving running. And I'm not swift like a deer. I don't have beautiful form and all this. Okay. I look like a shambling, broken, cowboy at the end of a long run. Okay. And so, but I ran to supplement my martial arts early and, 5Ks, 10Ks and all that. Then I was looking for new challenges and I got involved doing Ragnars, which I think I got some, I got one of those here. So nice. Ragnars are roughly 200 mile team relay races.
Okay.
So you run for 5 to 7 miles, then you sit in a van for a little bit, then maybe you can get some sleep. Then you run again and you do three legs for roughly 16-ish miles. And you get Stockholm syndrome sitting in the van with the other people and you smell bad. And you have these great stories and it becomes really fun. So I ramped up to doing that. And then during COVID, when all the races got canceled in 2020, my running team decided, hey, we're going to do something crazy so we don't do something stupid. And so we created a whole series of backyard events. So we did a beer mile. By the way, don't try and do that with ice cold, beer, because if it's like 95 degrees out, you get the burps.
Yeah.
So just one thing, in case anybody's
taking notes.
Doing a beer mile, but we did like a moonlit 5K. We decided we were going to do a backyard ultra one day. So a couple months out. So we would start at 9 a.m. and you go on out and you run anywhere between 1 and 3 miles and you commit to how many miles you're going to do. And you have to finish it by the end of the hour. And then the next hour you do it again. And the next hour you do it again. Well, I didn't realize that we were starting at 9 a.m. I thought we were starting at 5 a.m. So by 9 a.m. I had an additional 12 miles on everybody because I was doing 3 miles at a pop. And people end up dropping out after 8 hours, 9 hours. And I just kept going. And after I got to the point where I was at about 40 miles, 42 miles, I'm like, you know what? I can just stretch this to a full ultra, to a full double marathon. And so the other members of my team were texting me, supporting me and everything. And so that's actually how I did my first ultra. It wasn't planned.
Nice.
In fact, I swore years ago that I would never do another marathon because of, the effort to train for it and the recovery and all that. So in my twisted mathematics mind, two negatives make a positive, technically. So if I did a double marathon, then technically it doesn't count as a marathon. So it's okay. And that's how I justified doing 52 and a half miles in my mind.
That logic is hilarious.
It's twisted. It shows you the insight of a runner in some ways, but that's how I did it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, when I was recovering, and the recovery from that was actually sort of tough. I told you about how I had to tap into emotional reserves in the last 10 miles to help somebody else and all that. But I recovered for a little bit, and then it's like, you know what? I can go further with this. And so I planned out that in October, during a virtual race that we were doing for Autism Society, I'm like, I'm going to do 100 kilometers. So I, you know, structured it. I started at midnight and went out and ran for 4 or 5 hours, then took a little rest, then ran for another couple hours. And I ended up doing 100 kilometers, and I was done by like 8 p.m. I actually felt pretty damn good. So, you know, stretching yourself out and pushing yourself like that is one of the things that then helps you in these other areas. So yes, I started doing running to cross train and supplement my martial arts, same way that, you know, I started studying psychology to help cross pollinate and help with sales. But eventually I became essentially a behavioral economist from studying all this. And if you're taking all these different ideas and pushing yourself in different components, then you start integrating that into your overarching belief system, as Nietzsche says. And by assembling all this, you develop your own personal philosophy of excellence and everything else. And that ultimately is how I ended up coming out with writing the book, because I had all this in me, and then it just ended up crystallizing, and I sat down and spent 1,000 hours writing.
Wow. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. It's been so nice talking to you. We didn't even get to like a lot of the stuff I wanted to talk about. Also, like, you serve on the board for, what is it? The Autism Society.
Yep.
You serve on the board for that. I was really curious more on how you have managed to balance all these lives and cross-pollinate, as you mentioned. I got a little insight at the very end, but I would love to further this conversation another time, just because you're so interesting.
Let's sit down again in another month or two.
Yeah, and I'll send you over the song for what I got for awesome. my theme music. I'll get my theme music going. But finally, I just have a couple quick questions just for sharing to the world some of the stuff that you like to do. Or consume some of the content you like to consume. So we'll get right into it. What kind of music or podcasts have you been listening to lately?
Music, actually, I am incredibly eclectic. I will listen to anything from Mongolian throat singing to epic rap battles of history to Frank Sinatra to Romanian Mendeley. So I cross-pollinate like that, because music actually lights up your entire brain. If you look at a EEG of somebody's brain listening to music, it is incredibly stimulating. And so it brings out different aspects. So I will listen to almost anything at various points just to get my brain in overdrive.
Excellent.
Podcasts, I listen to stuff like yours. I listen to a lot of psychology, motivation, productivity, things like that. And I listen to some cooking ones because I like to eat. So, you know,
yeah.
So just exposing myself to other things.
Makes sense. What are any recent favorite TV shows or movies? And if you don't watch any, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I don't really watch TV. I mean, you know, the extent of my reality TV is Yankees games. And normally I listen to it.
That was another thing I wanted to talk about is Yankees games and just in general, what you're a fan of, but yeah. And do you have any favorite movie maybe?
Well, my two favorite movies are The Quiet Man. And since it was recently St. Patrick's Day, I had to watch it as I annually do with my kids.
Yeah.
And there's a really bad martial arts movie from the late 1980s about Taekwondo called Best of the Best. And so those are my two favorite movies of all time. But as I said, I'm a big comic book fan, specifically Thor. So, you know, all the Marvel Comics ones, when they come on out, eventually I watch them, things like that. But, you know, those become special event type things. So I do it with my kids so that we can bond over it and talk about it, because my kids each have their own favorite superhero like everybody else. And so it gives us an opportunity to do things together and create memories around that instead of me just sitting on the couch, you know, dorking out, watching stuff like that.
Yeah. So it seems when you're watching these movies or shows, you kind of, you enjoy the family or communal aspect rather than you just sitting on your own and watching. It's got to have some sort of context with it.
Yes.
All right. And what books are you reading right now? It seems like you've read a lot of books and you enjoy reading, love reading. What are you currently reading?
So right now I'm reading Robert Greene's The Daily Laws. So every year I choose one or two annual readers. Last year it was Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday. I'm reading my own book every single day. I actually read that day and I do the action item so that it's forcing me to walk the walk as opposed to just
practice
talk
what
the
you
talk.
Preach.
Exactly. I'm also reading 1 million followers because I'm starting to build out my following overall. So I wanted to see how other people are doing it and influence. And I just started reading Life Force by Tony Robbins.
Nice.
Because I'm turning 30-20 later this year. And I committed years ago that eventually I would win my age division in a race in the age 100 plus division. So gotta keep being serious about that. And with all the advancements in terms of nutrition, healthcare, a bunch of these other things.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a reason why I shouldn't live to see 120 and be vibrant and productive and contribute to society right up to the end.
I love that. Excellence mindset through and through, making it till 120. And finally, you're growing your following. So this is an excellent question. Where can people find you?
They can find me at the pub.
A true Irishman.
Yep. Good Irishman. I'll be wearing my kilt. Actually, I have a running kilt that I wear. but they can find my book on Amazon. They can go to my website, which is everyday-excellence.com. That's everyday-excellence.com.
I'll throw it in
the notes.
On
Twitter and Facebook at EDE with Joe. So at EDE for Everyday Excellence with Joe. That's me. And those are the easiest places to find me.
Sweet. Again, thanks for coming on. It was great having you. And yeah, have a great rest of your week, Joe.
Thank you, number one. Be excellent and grow today.
I will. And scene. All right. Thanks,
dude,
Joe.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you. That was a fantastic conversation. That's what I love about these. I love meeting interesting people, doing their thing, talking. And I mean, I would say personally, my superpower in this world, for a while, I would say it's just talking. And then someone told me that it's actually asking questions. I'm so curious into hearing, like I actually was researching you and I was like, damn, I really want to meet this guy. He seems very cool.
When you were bringing up Exacti, I'm like, whoa, this guy does homework.
Yeah. I've always been someone, and I'm sure you can relate from the intellectual perspective. If you do your research, you do your homework, that curiosity never goes away. It doesn't ever get satisfied. You can't learn everything. And when you do, that just means you haven't learned nearly as much as what you could.
Exactly.
You can't learn everything. It just kind of like fuels my curiosity for these conversations. And there was a lot that we went over. It's cool to meet another Taekwondo practitioner. I've stopped, but I've done jujitsu. I did Tai Chi. I even tried out Krav Maga. I've martial arts was a big part of my life for a while, and I'm trying to get back into jujitsu.
Yeah, but you just said was. It should be, continue to be. So that's your homework assignment, is go find something to enjoy playing around
class.
With.
My hobbies, I'll tell you, my hobbies, I really enjoy, I say it's mind, body, spirit. The mind is chess. I love playing chess. I do it daily. Mm-hmm. I play online against other people. The body is motorcycle. I actually have a motorcycle and I lift every day. That's my physical exercise, but the body, like, it's just very, it's a very visceral, like physical demanding thing. I feel
you
very
are connected with the road. You
truly,
are exposed.
Yeah, truly.
You're not protected. So it removes this bubble wrapping that everybody has around life being able to ride the motorcycle.
And you're not just responsible for yourself. Like, that's what people don't get, is you're responsible for, you pay for someone else's mistake. Therefore, you have to be insanely cautious and insanely like just aware. And I've never felt more presence than when I'm riding, because like you use all four of your limbs. You're just constantly paying attention, and you can this is something no one told me about it, but you can smell everything. Like when I'm riding through a canyon, I can smell the trees, the plants and everything. And it just, you feel like you're a part of it. So I really like that. And then my spirit.
I read years ago about a bunch of CEOs who rode motorcycles because it helped make them more aware. It made them better executives because they had to pay attention to everything.
It's very true. And then for the spirit is music. I love music. I wouldn't say I've gone as deep in the, or as wide as you have, but I definitely, my favorite genre is funk. So I recently picked up the bass. I've been playing.
Sweet.
I love playing the bass. I play guitar. I like to sing. I have a ukulele. Tried learning the harmonica here and there, some piano. So music's just always been a massive part of my life. My middle brother's actually a musician. He's got an album coming out soon on Spotify and Apple Music. So it's exciting to watch.
Cool. Let me know what it is, because I've got lots of music that I pay attention to. In fact, my buddy Christian Lopez is doing a Facebook concert tonight. He's had multiple releases. So check it out. It's at 8 o'clock Eastern. It'll be really cool.
5 o'clock. Yeah. I'll be done with my work day.
So let me know about your brother's album when you get a chance, you know, when he drops it, because I'd love to check it out.
Will do. Thank you so much for coming on, Joe. Seriously. I enjoyed this conversation a lot.
I did too, Armand. I'd love to come back in a couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause we can talk about stuff completely different at that point.
Yeah. I can tell. I can tell. But yeah, if you don't have anything else, I'm good on my end. Appreciate the time.
Excellent, my friend. Thank you. Have an awesome day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Quick update for anybody wondering, my song, the one that Joe and I were talking about, took me like 5 minutes after the episode to figure it out. It's Move On Up by Curtis Mayfield. Check it out. It's a good one.